This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. For most of the past 50 years, the nation of Myanmar has been under a military dictatorship and largely cut off from the West. But Myanmar is now in transition. There were democratic elections last November, and as the country moves toward new governance, changes in cultural life are also underway. An exhibit at UNC Chapel Hill showcases more than 30 paintings from different artists who have combined their personal stories with their nation's history. It's called Thukuma, Painting Myanmar in the Period of Transition. It runs through July 29th at the FedEx Global Education Center on UNC's campus. And joining me now is Ian Holliday. Ian is the Vice President of Teaching and Learning at Hong Kong University and the curator of the paintings in this exhibit. Ian, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Frank.
Tell us more about this collection. What are we going to see in the collection that you've curated?
It's a collection of 36 paintings by 36 different artists. All of them have lived through the transitional period and even the period before that. So none of them is an exile artist. All of them, this is their own personal story, as you said, being melded with the national story that is unfolding now in front of us. All of the paintings have been painted in this transitional period. So we're looking at 2011 to 2015, a series of artistic perspectives on what's happening inside the country.
It's interesting to think about their personal stories. You say these are artists who are not in exile, so they live through the period. One would think with artistic aspirations, what was the cultural life like? What was the life of the artist like under the dictatorship?
I think it wasn't much of a life if you wanted to be a very public artist. If you wanted to exhibit your paintings, it was tough. There was censorship of everything in Burma from 62, became Myanmar in 1989. They censored the printed word, they censored movies, and they censored all forms of creative expression. For an artist, I think that was probably a little bit less difficult than it might have been for a journalist. If you're a journalist, your story is dead within a couple of days, and if it's been successfully censored for that period, then it's never going to come to life again. But if you're a painter and your work gets censored one day, well, it can still be exhibited 2 or 3 or even 20 or 30 years later. And that really is what happened to many of the artists. Many of them really experienced an underground existence to some extent. They collaborated with each other. They supported each other. They set up a fellowship society and they contributed $1 a month to a benefit society. And if you had a birth in the family or a death in the family, you could withdraw some funds from that account. And they also supported each other artistically. So this was really a very isolated society. The internet didn't come to Myanmar until about the mid-2000s, so roughly 10 years ago. And learning about artistic trends, what was going on in the wider world, was something that they did very collaboratively.
How dangerous was that kind of collaboration? And by that I mean, how seriously did the government take artistic expression and the chance that this might get out?
It wasn't dangerous in the sense that it was life-threatening and you weren't going to be arrested. It was more that it was simply difficult to pursue your passion. So most of the artists in the show would have done something else until about 2 or 3 years ago. Almost none of them lived as a professional artist. And I think that was as much because of the isolation as because of the censorship. There simply wasn't a market for art in those days. There, of course, is a domestic market, but it's not very big. And there's not that much wealth inside the country. And many of the people who would ordinarily support an art market, international diplomats, businessmen, NGO workers, were simply not present in very great numbers.
So give us a profile, a sense of who these artists are.
They're everything. They range in age from 25 to 75. They're, of course, male and female. They come from different regions of the country, different religions. Some of them are from the Burman majority. Others are from minority groups like the Shan and the Kachin, the Mon or the Chin. So they bring all of these different perspectives to bear. Some of them have a formal training and others don't. So there were two state schools of fine art that continued to function throughout the period, one in Yangon, one in Mandalay. Some artists were trained in those schools. Others simply picked things up as they went along.
What was the official theory on art? In other words, what was permissible, what was taught in those fine art academies?
It was very conservative, and the censorship was also very conservative. There was absolutely nothing expert or professional about the censorship. So you might get somebody seconded from the Ministry of Agriculture for a couple of years and somebody else from the Ministry of Trade. They didn't know anything about art, but they did know what they didn't like. So they didn't like nudity. Yeah. They thought that was not consonant with the Burmese tradition. They didn't like abstraction. They didn't like politics, of course, in art. And they didn't like certain colours, which they found too challenging. So red, white and black were all censorable colours until about 2012, 2013.
Actually, that's interesting. You should tell us about those particular colours and the rationale behind each. I think it's revealing.
So black was seen as too doom-laden and white was seen as too pure and maybe therefore reflecting on the lack of purity in the government, in the regime. And red had a very special status in that it was a little bit too bloody and revolutionary, but it also became the colour of choice of the National League for Democracy, which is Aung San Suu Kyi's political party. So anybody using too much red in a painting could be seen as implicitly supporting or making the case for the NLD. And so paintings on a red field, for instance, if you painted a boy or a woman on a red field, that would look too much like the NLD's flag, which is a fighting peacock on a red field, and that would be censored for those reasons.
So, and the paintings that we're going to see in this exhibit, give us a sense of the range of the subject area. What are we looking at now in this period of transition?
I've tried to pull together paintings which cover a number of subjects. So for sure there are some political paintings in there, some of them reflecting on the authoritarian period, some of them reflecting on the freedoms that now exist, and some of them looking at tensions in the society. For instance, there's a lot of sectarian violence. There's Buddhist violence directed against Muslim groups, and that's also reflected in several of the paintings in the exhibition. But they're by no means all political. I didn't want to suggest that the only thing that interests contemporary artists in Myanmar is the politics of the day. It isn't. Some of them want to celebrate the heritage of their country, and they're looking back, for instance, to the Bagan temples. There's 2,000 temples in Bagan. And when you visit them, many of them still have extant wall paintings from, say, the 14th or the 16th century. Now, many artists are inspired by that. Some artists go there on annual pilgrimages simply to take a look again at what their forebears did and to reflect that in contemporary art. And some of them simply want to capture what they see on the streets of their cities or even in the landscape of the countryside. This is a society that is still 70% rural. And so much of what they want to tell us about actually is taking place in the villages around the country.
It's fascinating to think about capturing art in this period of transition, such a radical transition, because artists certainly have a great voice in shaping a sense of cultural identity, who we are, and often who we were as a nation, you know, creating myths and bringing myths in the foreground and backgrounding others. Is there some of that going on, a kind of nation building, a sort of identity building that can go on through art? And I don't mean that necessarily in terms of what the artists intend, but are you know, the people of Myanmar are sort of looking for this kind of new identity now that they're reshaping their governance?
Yes. I mean, it's a very big theme, particularly the place of religion in the nation. So just before, if I take us back 50 years, but just before the military coup in 1962 that saw an end to a very early democracy in Burma, the government of the day had sought to make Buddhism the national religion. And that was seen as a step too far, and the military stepped in and said, no, we're much broader based than that, and we don't want to have a national religion. Now, that issue is resurfacing, and many of the artists are actually expressing a very strong Buddhist perspective in their art. I think what's more difficult is to see how they're going to convey a sense of a multicultural, multi-faith nation. This is going to be much tougher. But it's tough for everybody. I mean, we see this in Aung San Suu Kyi herself. We see it in everybody who's leading the society, grappling with this very, very difficult issue.
We should talk about her. You've raised her name a couple of times, Aung San Suu Kyi, who was the nominal leader of the democracy movement under house arrest for much of her career, now cut off from the presidency by constitutional mandate. But tell us who she is and how she figures into the picture politically right now.
Right. She spent much of her life overseas, and the reason why she's cut off from the presidency is that the constitution doesn't allow anybody with a foreign spouse or foreign children to run for the presidency. And she married a British academic, lived in Oxford for many years, and has two sons with British passports. Now, she wasn't really a part of the national story until the seismic year of 1988. So the coup in 62 created a military-backed regime, and wasn't contested very much until 88, when there was a national uprising that convulsed really, you know, every corner of the country. Aung San Suu Kyi wasn't even a major player in that until the very end. So it was crushed after 6 months in September. She came to prominence in August. And what she did was she gave a speech at the Shwedagon Pagoda, which is the national monument in Rangoon. At least 500,000 people came, maybe 1 million people out of, say, 35 million in the country. And I think they recognized in her the leader that they'd been seeking. And since then, yes, as you say, she's been seen by people up and down the country as the natural leader of the opposition movement and hopefully of the nation itself.
But this brings us to the legacy of colonialism and these interrupted conversations of a British colony of Burma originally. These conversations nationally and culturally that are ongoing, they evolve over the generations, that are interrupted by colonialism and then resume decades later. And so trying to shape a national identity out of these, I keep calling them interrupted conversations.
Yes.
Becomes a real challenge.
Yes, particularly as in this case, as in many others, what is now defined as the nation, the borders that make up this place were actually not in place until the British came. So it's the British who drew lines on the map and said, we're going to call this Burma. And they did that simultaneously. They made Burma a province of India. So for Britain until 37, so until the last 10 years of the colonial experience, Burma was just another province of the Indian Raj. And so there wasn't really much nation building that could take place within that space. And it's been that's one of the reasons why it's been a very difficult post-colonial journey.
Well, these are cultural currents, and they do cross these borders, and they had been going on for generations, millennia perhaps. And again, you interrupt these with artificial borders and artificial constructs, and then people have to recreate their identity out of that. What does it mean for the artist? What traditions do these artists go back to? Are there ancient cultural traditions that are being brought forward? Are they looking to the West and more modern ideas about art? What's happening artistically?
I think they do go back very much to the, as I said, to Bagan period wall paintings. But I think also the British brought in a tradition of watercolor painting and of focusing on landscape. You know, British have always had a very strong interest in landscape in art. And I think that's one of the things that's reflected in these paintings is a proliferation of very vibrant landscapes. I don't think that they're very well informed about global movements in art. And so when you see the paintings, they seem to be almost from another planet. They seem to have been very cut off from many of the major traditions in contemporary art. So there's some modernism in there, but not a great deal, actually.
Let's talk about a couple in the exhibit. Let's take a look at this one called Seated Dancer. Tell us more about that one.
Right. So Seated Dancer is by Kim Maung Yin. He is one of the grand old men of contemporary Burmese art, born in 1938 and died a couple of years ago and revered by all of the young artists today. Now, the reason why he painted his Seated Dancer series is that you'll see in the painting there's a dancer who has no legs and almost has no hands and is a very...
It doesn't look happy.
No, it doesn't look very happy. Of course, dancers are supposed to be dancing and they're supposed to be joyful. And one of the things he's trying to convey in that painting is the fact that 50 years of military control have drained all of the life, drained all of the joy and all of the vibrancy out of the country. And so he became very, very well known for his Seated Dancer series.
Was this a series that he started under the military
regime? Yes, absolutely, and continued it. So that painting's from 2012.
And it has the forbidden colors featured prominently,
yeah.
Right?
But by 2012, that was becoming less dangerous, less problematic.
Now, here's another one called Ordinary People. Maybe you can tell
us. Right, so Ordinary People by Min Zor is a picture of three boys. This, again, is from a series, and in each of the paintings within the series, you see rather robotic young people. So they all have the same faces. They've all got the same gestures in this painting. In another painting, they're all wearing Aung San Suu Kyi T-shirts. The point that he's making is that actually the youth of today is not very politically engaged. He's an 88er. He was born in 1970. By 88, he's 18. And he feels that the youth of today are not as engaged as he and his generation were. I think the other interesting thing about that painting is that he's one of the artists that goes back to Bagan on the annual pilgrimage. And so the faces that he's giving you in that painting are actually faces from the 16th century, really brought up to date and positioned for the contemporary youth.
In style, these I would characterize these as folk art in America.
Yes,
and I wonder
absolutely.
How much of the exhibit is this kind of rendering.
Yes, I think that's fair, alongside the landscape studies that I mentioned that come out of the British heritage.
What about the market for art? You talked about it obviously suppressed during the period of the military regime. What about now? Are people interested in art?
Increasingly so. There are a number of international exhibits, Art Basel, and those kinds of global festivals of art that are now picking up on Burmese art much, much more so than they did until about 4 or 5 years ago. And artists are now traveling. So I took an artist to Hong Kong a couple of years ago. He was 50 years old and had never left his country. Within 3 months, he visited Hong Kong, Seoul, and Miami. And this is just an indication of somebody who, for 50 years, is ignored by the world. Suddenly, within a number of months, he's everywhere. And I think that's an indication of what's happening more generally.
Well, if you talk about the artist who painted ordinary people, Min Za, and his worry that people aren't political enough, certainly the complaint here in America and the United States is that we are not very conscious of the world around us and that we don't pay too much attention to other parts of the planet. It seems to me that an art exhibit that brings you into the hearts and souls of a people is one good way to try to understand better their story. So this exhibit hopefully will have that effect here.
That's what I'm hoping too. I think you can write books, you can give academic lectures, and you'll largely be speaking to people who are already interested. If you put up some paintings, people will be drawn in for a number of reasons. Some people just to look at the paintings. Other people will actually look beyond the paintings and start thinking about Myanmar in new ways. And I think one of the things about this exhibit is that we tend to have rather stereotypical images of Myanmar. There's Saint Liang San Suu Kyi and the devilish generals. There's the black and the white. But this actually is much more nuanced, and it's an explosion of color from what we think of as a rather drab, gray, dictatorial nation. And it helps to bring, I think, the nation to life.
What a pleasure to talk with you. Ian Holliday, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you very much, Frank.
Ian Holliday is Vice President of Teaching and Learning at Hong Kong University and the curator of a new exhibit at UNC Chapel Hill called Thuku Ma, Painting Myanmar in a Time of Transition. On view at the FedEx Global Education Center through July 29th. And you can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Will Michaels, and Charlie Shelton Ormond. Robin Copley is our technical director, Brent Wolf, WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.